This Christmas, you can put an Apple IIc under your tree for under $2,000 with a monitor, carrying case, and over $300 of rebate coupons for a printer, external disk drive, joystick, Apple mouse, and 9 mind-expanding software programs. Then, there are another 10,000 Apple IIc programs to explore, which very nicely solves the problem of what to give next Christmas, and the Christmas after that, and the Christmas after that.
Best 30 plus minute Apple conversation you are going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah. Oh, yeah. Joining me today, when he met Steve Jobs, Steve gushed about how he was his favorite Apple journalist and gave him a big hug. At least that's the story he tells us. Leander Cady is here.
Hello.
Also joining us, the only things more lit than his Apple stories are those big, beautiful caps. He can barely fit them through his pant legs. Buster Heine is here.
Yo.
What's up? Also with us, we call him the Bullseye, because his dart, it always hits the mark. I don't even know what that means. Lewis Wallace is here.
Hey.
It sounded great, didn't it?
Oh, I love it. I'm going to get it tattooed on my forehead.
The Bullseye. Oh, what a great nickname. They call him the Bullseye. I don't know why, Lewis, but I always imagine you as just like a slick dude from Miami Vice. Like, you got like the pastel t-shirt on. You got the blazer on over that. You never wear socks. You got penny loafers on. Did I just nail your style perfectly?
Oh, my God. Do you have like a webcam in my house?
I did hack into your webcam. I mean, watching you get dressed every day just to see what you wear. That's the only reason.
Great.
I don't get any other pleasure from it. It's just for that purpose. Great sense of style.
Knew I should have stuck with HomeKit.
All right. Well, let's see here. What do we have on the docket today? Oh, my goodness. So much good stuff. Let's see here. We are going to be talking about Johnny Ive. He's back at it, baby. In a surprising turn of events, Johnny Ive has retaken the reins of Apple's design team. If you recall, was it like a year or so ago, 2 years ago, he gave up that position to become chief design officer. Well, he's back. So we'll be talking about that and what it means for Apple. Also, we got to talk about the new iMac. It's out. The reviews are coming in. It is a beastly machine with a monster price tag. I mean, it's just nuts. So we'll tell you what people think about the new iMac Pro. And let's see here, by the numbers. Have you ever wondered just how much money Apple makes every hour, every minute, every second? You probably never have. I didn't, but I ran across some facts and figures on Reddit that really wowed me. So I'll tell you guys a bit about those, and you'll be left feeling like a real plebeian. And then also, we'll wrap up the show with what Apple got right in 2017 and what it needs to do better in 2018. They had a wild year this year, and they really came out with a lot of cool products, and they took some chances this year, unlike in years past, or at least in recent years. They did a lot of things differently, I think, this year. So it'll be worth taking a look back at 2017 and then talking about what we hope they will do better. And if you missed last year we did arguably one of our most fun shows ever, I think. We wrapped up with our favorite gadgets of 2017, and we had a mega list. There was like, I think I counted 19 different products that we talked about that were our favorite items, and there were some real wild, weird ones. If you didn't listen, Lewis pitched a robotic kitty litter egg dome. It's just a totally weird product, and there's a bunch of stuff like that, so go back and listen to that. And in the show before that, I think 312, we did our favorite movies of 2017. We're going to keep this going. I think next week we're doing our favorite television of 2017. So come back next week for that. Let's see here. Okay, before we jump into this week's first story, let me go ahead and say thank you to Squarespace for supporting this episode. You know, it's almost 2018. Do you have a business idea that you've been meaning to get off the ground? Or maybe you started a business in 2017. Maybe you want to showcase your photography or your artwork. You need a website, and squarespace.com is the place to go to get started with a website that will be built quickly and easily. You use their template system. You can drag and drop your social media. You can build image galleries. It's all so easy to use. You'll have a website up and running in no time. And plus, Squarespace just added 8 new templates that are available to you to choose from. So you could choose one of the templates, and boom, you'll have a website up in no time. Or you can customize the template to make the website look uniquely yours. They also have a beautiful analytics app for your iPhone, so you can see exactly what is happening with your e-commerce store, with your blog, with your website. You can see who's visiting. It's a really powerful app, and it shows you everything you need to see right in the palm of your hands. Go to squarespace.com to sign up for your free trial and check it out. Build a website. If you like it, use code CULTCAST at checkout. You'll save 10% off your first order. And if you order a year of service, you get an additional discount plus a free domain name at squarespace.com. And the code you use at checkout is CULTCAST. Okay, Leander, big news this week.
Yeah.
How surprised were you that Johnny Ive, he's back. He's
pretty
back.
Surprised.
He's back
yeah.
in the V-neck. He's back at the helm. He's back with the reins. And
he's
they
back in his little white room. I know, yeah. Dreaming up beautiful things.
He came in very soft-spokenly and told everyone to get the hell out. And they kind of laughed, but he was dead serious, right?
Right. Yeah.
And then they were escorted out by the white-robed Apple security.
Yeah, just like Omarosa, yeah, you know.
That's right.
I know, very really strange, really peculiar, really unexpected, and really low-key, and very mysterious, too, you know. Like,
right.
There haven't been any good reports about what exactly is going on. But, you know, it's instructive to note that the previous head of design, you know, Richard Howarth, who was previously reporting to Tim Cook and Alan Dye, who was Richard Howarth was in charge of the Industrial Design Studio, and Alan Dye was sort of his UI counterpart.
And we should mention, they took Johnny's job and they split it into those two roles for those two
right.
men.
Yeah, yeah. And they were both reporting to Tim Cook, and they've both been disappeared from the, you know, executive page on Apple's website.
Oh, they're gone.
They're gone.
And I heard also that they've also disappeared from their personal lives. No one knows where they are.
Well, you know, I just looked on LinkedIn and a couple of other places to see if there's any sign of, you know, anything going
on. Interesting. That is interesting.
Yeah, so they, you know, he's Richard Howarth, I mean, when he took over Johnny's job, he was the head of the Industrial Design Studio. Johnny was kicked upstairs to be, you know, to do sort of higher order stuff. And he was obviously concentrating a lot on the spaceship campus. And he was also doing a lot of work with stores around the world. And yeah, you know, to take his old job back again, you know, I mean, it sort of, it hints that there's some internal turmoil. You know, it's not a routine thing. You know, this is definitely a big shakeup. And, you know, it looks as though those other two have been, you know, demoted, canned. It's not clear.
Yeah, Johnny Ive had ascended past mere mortality. He was no longer going to just design products. He was like, in Scientology, they call it all clear, right? He was just done.
Oh, yeah. He was like Dr. Manhattan. He was on a different plane.
Exactly. He had entered a different plane of existence. So for him to come back and start doing this, and for those two guys to disappear, is very strange.
Right. And it speaks to a bit of a crisis, right? You know, I mean, they must have thought, oh, we need the old magic back.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know, you know, like, what have they done the last couple of, you know, they're working on like in a 3-year time frame, right? So it's only been how long was it, 2 years since he was absent?
Right.
So, you know, I mean, I thought actually Apple had a pretty good year this last year.
Me too, and they have taken more risks this year than they have in a long time.
Right, yeah. So, you know, maybe the products that they had been working on or you know, the products that they were hoping to come to fruition and didn't, you know, would have been around now and next year.
Or maybe there were some really close calls where they almost didn't get products out the door.
Right.
And, you know, we did a show a while ago about the iPhone launch stories you've never heard. And it was surprising doing the research for that show because there were so many things happening behind the scenes. And meanwhile, Apple had the facade that everything was all cool. The product was going to come out. There was nothing to worry about. And in the background, it was absolute chaos. And they weren't even sure they were going to get this thing out the door. And it makes me think maybe there are some similar scenarios that happened behind the scenes during recent product launches, and they were like, we got to get Johnny back because we need someone that knows what they're doing.
Yeah, we need that old magic, yeah.
Yeah.
And that, you know, there'd been a little bit of, you know, a couple of high-profile leaves. Chris Stringer, who was like one of the other, he was probably the other one, the other main candidate for Johnny's job when Richard Howarth took over. He left, which isn't really that surprising, right? Because he was, like I said, probably the other leading candidate for that head of the design studio. He was one who was mainly responsible for the design of the first iPhone and a whole bunch of other products, you know, but he was definitely like, it looked to me before Richard Howarth took over that he was like, you know, Johnny's number two. But yeah, so he's left, and it's not clear where he went. I reached out to him, see if I could interview him. Didn't hear a word back. Who was the other one? Danny Costa. He was someone else who also left, and he went to GoPro, I think. But that was kind of like, you know, shortly after Richard Howe took over. Those are the only two that I know of. The only turnover in that team of 20 in the industrial design studio.
They were probably gunning for his job, and once they realized they weren't going to get it, they're like, all right, peace out.
Right. And then they got that weird situation where you're working under, you know, one of your peers.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So, you know, someone you work with who's a colleague suddenly becomes your boss.
There's got to be a lot of ego involved in that team too. I know they say everyone gets along, but you have such high caliber talent. There's got to be ego there.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Right. Definitely. And for sure.
Well, this story is developing. We'll be keeping an eye on this story. But personally, I'm very happy about this news because I thought Johnny Ive, and I'm sure I'm not alone in thinking this, I thought he was on his way out the door. I thought this is one way for him to free himself of his daily duties and to make it seem like he's still around during the show, and then he was going to be gone.
Yeah, he was in a dream position. I mean, why would he go anywhere? You know, he's the head of design of the company with probably the most resources in the world. Mm-hmm. It's astonishing, you know, like the amount of resources they can bring to bear, and he's free to the day to day management and all the routine meetings. I mean, it's not a good sign if you promote someone, you know, like, because Richard Howe had worked there almost as long as Johnny Ive had. You know, they're part of the original team there before Steve Jobs even returned, responsible for this astonishing string of products. And you know, Steve Jobs gets all the credit. Oh my God, he thought up the iPhone, he thought up this, he thought up that. You know, and obviously he empowered that design studio, but you know, I think it was a design studio, the way they worked, the team they had there, the process, you know, that's what's responsible for the magic. And I think that's why a lot of people misunderstand Apple, is because it was the processes that were set up, you know, during Jobs' tenure that makes it so powerful and allows it to come up with, you know, to be so creative and to come up with all these these innovations. And for it to sort of take a step backwards, you know, is detrimental to that process, right? It shows that it's a little more that the personalities are involved more important than the process itself.
Exactly, because they want you to believe that if Johnny Ive leaves, it's not a big deal because it's the culture that's ingrained in the people that will live on beyond one person, is what you're saying. Right. And now it's like, oh, wait, maybe they do need Johnny Ive.
They do need him, after all.
And unless if he leaves, it's really going to be a problem.
Unless he wanted his old job back. I mean, you know, that's the only other thing I can think of, is that, you know, maybe he was bored. Because he's so into this stuff. He's so into you know, running it, designing. Maybe, you know, like he loved his old job so much that he wanted to get back in the action. And that, I think, is actually maybe a good, it's cruel because there's some casualties there, you know, like Richard Howe gets kicked to the curb, or maybe he goes back to his old job, or maybe he's out of the company completely. But, you know, maybe Johnny just loved to run the studio again. And of course, now the studio's, another interesting thing is that the studio's now back in the main, in the Spaceship campus. And he gave an interview to some magazine a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying that for the first time they've got all the interaction designers in the studio now too, which before it was just the industrial design team, so there was only like 20 or 30 people, designers, and they had a CAD team and then some technicians and stuff like that, but the people who were doing the software were completely siloed. And Johnny actually broke with Steve Jobs' rules, and he invited them into the studio to show them what they were doing, which he was not supposed to do, hoping that the industrial design stuff would bleed over into the software stuff. And we detail this in that, you know, with Baz Ording, was the one who told me all this stuff.
Phil Schiller was just talking about this same concept in an interview, saying that Tim Cook really was trying to push collaboration in Apple and get people to work together, which I thought was interesting because it also means we're going to see a ton more leaks. I mean, it's going to be impossible to be tight-lipped when you're involving more and more and more people in these projects.
Well, they were doing that anyway, I think, to be honest. Like, you know, like I said, Ive was doing it, you know, on an official basis. Like, Steve wanted to keep each department completely siloed. He didn't want anyone, even if you weren't, you know, he only wanted co-workers talking to each other. You know, he didn't want to talk to the co-workers talking to other people, even in the same department, about what projects they were working on. He was so, you know, he kept everything really, really closely siloed.
Have you seen the movie The Prestige?
No.
Okay. Well, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's a magician who is trying to keep his secrets or his magic tricks secret. And at the end, this is not really a spoiler. You see that he has employees, and then the employees are blind, And I was thinking that was a similar parallel to Steve Jobs. Like, he probably didn't even want the people working on the projects to know what they were working on. He would, like, blindfold them and just have them, like, working just with their hands, right?
Exactly.
And they wouldn't even know what they were doing.
That's not too much of a, of an exaggeration. I mean, they were exactly like that. I mean, they were, you know, the iOS team were talking about doing exactly that same sort of thing. They didn't even know. They were designing an operating system for a device they hadn't even seen.
You're wandering around the design lab with a blindfold. Your hands are out in front of you. You're trying to figure out where the coffee is.
Yep.
I know. Oh, funny. Okay, well, speaking of Johnny Ive designing new products, so we got a new product this week, the iMac Pro. By the time you hear this, it's out. And if you configure it on Apple.com, the highest tier model is, let me see here. I wrote down the price. Oh, yeah, there it is. It's $13,427. And I saw an interesting post this week about how much money Apple makes per year. And everyone knows they make absolute massive amounts of cash. But when you quantify it this way, it really helps you understand how many products they're selling every day. So they make $124 million, almost $125 million per day, which breaks down to $5.2 million per hour. That is $86,000 a minute. And Leander, if you had to guess how much money they were making per second, what would you say?
How much was it again?
How much money per second do you think Apple makes? Just throw
what was it. How many per minute?
$86,000 per minute.
Okay, we'll divide that by 60. I don't know.
Yeah, take a guess.
1,000 something in a minute.
Yeah, great. Clearly, you should have been a math major. $1,445 approximately every single second. That's what Apple's making. What is that? That's like a maxed out MacBook every second that they sell. And when you think about how expensive Apple products are, it's just insane to think that they're selling those expensive products in such huge quantities that they're able to make almost $1,500 per second. So we got this Mac Pro. I keep calling it the Mac Pro. The iMac Pro. The Mac Pro is incoming, hopefully in early 2018. Apple has promised to make their Macs Pro again. And this is one of the computers they pitched when they had that big come to Jesus moment, and they said, oh, we need to do better with the Macs, and this is going to be one of the first ones that we release. So the iMac Pro, as you would have imagined, is an absolute beast, and it has a monster price tag to boot. If you want one, I think the base model is $5,100. Does anyone know if that's right? It's very close. And it comes with an 8, 10, or 18-core Intel Xeon chip with 34, 64, or 128 gigabytes of DDR4 RAM. Also, it has a new thermal design. Apple says that it runs 80% cooler than a regular iMac. And here's an interesting tidbit. It has 4 Thunderbolt 3 ports. It can power 2 5K displays or 4 4K displays at once. It's got a 10 gigabit Ethernet port. And check this out. What's this? Oh, wait, what's this? 4 USB-A ports. What do you know? Oh my goodness, an SD card slot? I thought those weren't pro ports, Phil Schiller. And a 3.5-millimeter headphone jack. It's almost as if pros actually need those things. That's amazing that they're offering that on the iMac Pro. That makes this computer Apple's most port-friendly Mac in years. And for those of you wondering if you can upgrade the RAM, no, you may not. It's hermetically sealed. And Apple has installed a small block of C4 in the iMac. And if you open it, it will explode.
That's right.
So no, you've been warned. Don't even attempt to upgrade the RAM. Whatever you order is what will be placed in the landfill when you are done with this machine. And the early reviews are out for the iMac Pro. And as you can imagine, everyone just hemmed and hawed and guffawed and talked about how this is the greatest machine ever, because Apple yet again released this machine to a very select group of, there was like an astronomer, I think, who was using it for calculating star maps or whatever astronomers do. Reading your horoscope.
That's right.
Horoscope. Your horoscope is going to be more accurate than ever on the iMac Pro. And they also gave it to a couple of YouTubers. MKBHD was one of the guys who got one, of course. And the reason I say that is because it's always hard to know exactly how great of a machine this is, because the guys who get the machines early, like MKBHD, Marques Brownlee did, you know, they're going to temper their reactions because they know that they're getting a privileged position with Apple, and so they're not going to tell you exactly what they feel.
This is the same strategy, right, with the iPhone 10. That you know, they don't want to give it to the nerds who are going to like pull it to pieces.
That's right.
And come up with some kind of nitpicky thing like about the C4 or you know the four USB ports.
It's genius. I'm not even complaining. I'm just pointing it out. And I think it's cool that they give it to YouTubers. And I was thinking, they didn't even give it to The Verge. You don't hear the New York Times with one or any of the major publications who would normally get a machine like this. It's the guys on YouTube. And then I thought, well, you know what? MKBHD is as big as it gets. He's way bigger than The Verge. If The Verge puts out a video, they might get 200,000-300,000 views. Marques Brownlee gets at least 1 million on his video reviews. So he's kind of the mainstream now. And so Apple's,
and he's building some excitement about it too. You know, like he's going to rave about it. He's going to get excited.
Totally. Yeah, he does.
Not like, you know, it'd be like if they gave it to us. We'd be pulling it to pieces. We'd be complaining. We'd be bitching.
Especially me and Buster.
Right. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Lando would be telling you what he liked. Buster and I would be telling you what a piece of crap it is, how you should return it, and so on and so forth.
Right.
So, and the other thing, just MKBHD's videos, they're visually,
so beautiful.
Aesthetically, they're beautiful. Yeah, he uses I think he uses a red, I forget the name of the camera. It's an 8K
Epic
camera, though.
I
think he uses a $50,000 camera to do his reviews. And that's just the camera. That doesn't include the accessories, the lenses. He probably uses, if I had to guess, I would say his gear costs $85,000 to review phones and computer equipment on YouTube. So they're the most beautiful videos I think you'll find of any technology reviewer out there. And if you haven't seen it, I'll link to it in the show notes. It's a great video. It just gives you an overview of the system and talks about the pros and some of the cons, although he doesn't really talk very much about the cons. So he got a 10-core 3 gigahertz model, and it had 128 gigabytes of DDR4 and an AMD Vega Pro 64 with 64 gigabytes of RAM. This was the crazy part. He did a Blackmagic speed disk test. Now, to put this in perspective, I do that test on new hard drives. I just got a new USB 3 hard drive. It does 200 megabytes up and down, so read and writes. My MacBook Pro, my 2013, does that same test. It does maybe like 500 megabytes up and down. The new iMac Pro does 3,000 megabytes up and down. It's one of the most insanely, blisteringly fast SSDs I have ever seen. It's probably one of the fastest that's out there, if not the fastest. There was also some feedback from some of the people who have used the new iMac. Photographer Vincent Laforet got to incorporate the iMac Mini into his workflow for a few days. And he said, I've seldom seen a jump this dramatic before on any new generation of Macs. 20 to 30% speed increases are the norm, not 200 to 300% increases. Marques said he's been using the machine for a week. And his reaction was a little bit more tempered, but you could tell he was impressed. And he said, especially with the Final Cut Pro for performance, which I think is the reason why a lot of people would buy this machine, he was able to preview and edit his 8K raw footage, which if you're not into video, that's like an insane, hugely insane file that a lot of machines would probably blue screen if you tried to even attempt to edit. He said that he was able to move those around with ease and preview his cuts and his color grading on the fly with no problems at all, which if you edit video, you know how massive that is. He also makes the argument, as I'm sure Leander Caney will hear shortly, that the price is actually a good value because though it is expensive, no one's denying that, you are getting cutting-edge components, some of which weren't even available to purchase, period, or even real until Apple announced that they were being used in the iMac Pro. But if you got similar components, a machine without a screen, and of course without the beautiful design, is going to cost you about the same price as the iMac Pro does. So if you keep that in mind, then maybe...
Someone on Instagram, Twitter, priced it out and said that you know, equivalent PC is actually several thousand dollars more expensive without the screen.
Yeah, let's see here. I want to give a shout out to Machiel Van Dorst, listener of the Cultcast, because I think that was him that said he said it's cheap. If you're looking at the high-end model of the iMac Pro, he said comparable Windows systems approach $19,000 and don't come with a display. So if you buy all the components separately, that seems high. I want to believe that he actually went and priced that out. That does seem a little high to me. That's that it's so much higher than an iMac Pro, because the iMac Pro decked out is what, 13.5, as I said at the beginning of the show? Yeah, something like that. So in any case, I guess it's a good value if you need the most powerful system that's out there. I mean, watching the reviews, I kind of was like, what can I sell? What things in my house can I sell to get my hands on one of these? But most people would never need this kind of insane power. I mean, who would need it? Only people.
It's overkill. I mean, that's what I was thinking too. You know, I mean, I definitely don't need it. You know, for the kind of work I'm doing,
it'd be like driving a monster truck down the fairway at the golf course, right? I mean, you're gonna look cool, and the iMac Pro is space gray, so you have like a unique looking Mac. It looks different than everyone else's. But yeah, if time isn't money to you, if you don't care how long a video exports for, then you don't need to pay this kind of money. I think people who need this machine are, again, astrologers who need to read your horoscope and they need to have like lots of different data points to be chewed through and spit out. Like the dudes in The Martian. Did you see The Martian? Did anyone see The Martian?
Yeah.
And they were trying to like plot his course, and he was like, he had like an Ethernet cord into the mainframe. He's like, I got to plot this course so we can get home Matt Damon. Like, those are the guys who need this machine. Or guys who are exporting video all day. Because if you work in a video house and time is money, and you could save 2 hours a day by getting this machine, then I can see why it would be worth it. But in any case, it looks like an absolute beast. And it's available at apple.com now.
What do you think of the big bezels around it? Like, someone pointed that out. Like, you know, saying that this iMac design hasn't changed fundamentally in a decade.
I mean, it does look exactly the same as all the other iMacs before it. But hey, if you got a good thing, why change it, right?
Well, I like it, but they were right about the bezels. Look at the bezels. Look at the big bezels around it. It's in an era when, you know, you've got like flat screen TVs without bezels. Mm-hmm. I think it's got to go bezel-less, you know. And I think they were, you know, like as soon as someone pointed it out, I'm like, oh my god, they're right. They're totally right.
It's horrible, isn't it? I can barely stand to look at it.
Oh my god!
I wouldn't spend $500 for this machine, let alone $13,000. If they gave me one, I would not even use it. I'd probably just give it to Goodwill.
Cover it, with a cloth, right?
Well, now I'm looking at it, and I guess from the photos, you can't really tell that it has. Oh wait, there we go. Yeah, it does have some serious bezels, doesn't it? That is interesting. Right. I wonder why they didn't go with a full screen design or glass design.
I don't know. You know, with the iPhone 10.
Right. And, yeah.
You know, it's like bezel-less seems to be the modern way to do it.
I would have also thought that they would have included Face ID.
That's it. Yeah. Exactly. Yep. Good point. Yeah. Where's Face ID?
Seems like a major omission, considering Face ID is the hot new thing, and you know they're going to build it into the Macs eventually. It's just a matter of time. In fact, the I wish I could remember the name of the factory that builds the modules they use for Face ID. Apple just made some huge investment in this factory that builds this component. And I think they're investing like $350 million or $390 million. And the factory is in Texas, and they're going to beef up their factory so they can produce more of these components, because Apple is clearly committed to putting Face ID in everything. And it wouldn't surprise me if in the next 1 to 2 years, it's in every device that you own, which will be amazing, right? Can you imagine just walking up to your Mac and it just automatically just unlocks and you sit down and you can just start using it? Without having to wear your Apple Watch, that would be pretty cool. Okay, let's move on from the iMac Pro. Let me give a quick thanks to Orbi for supporting this. I can't even talk. Let me give a quick thanks to Orbi for supporting this episode. Wi-Fi is something you don't really think about until you don't have it or it's not working properly, at which point you curse the sky, you shake your fist, you pull out your hair, you rip your shirt open, and you just rage quit. Your video is buffering. You have those Wi-Fi dead zones in your house when you rove around. You know, it ruins your life. The Orbi is a mesh router. You have one component in one room. You have another piece of the Orbi in another room. And so it expands your Wi-Fi coverage in your house. The one router model just doesn't work very well, and it's kind of antiquated. And a system like the Orbi is going to be much more effective for larger homes. Even for smaller homes, it's going to expand your coverage, and you're going to get much faster connection speeds from more places in your house, because you're going to be closer to the router wherever you go. And Orbi is one of the fastest, best-reviewed mesh routing systems that's out there. In fact, Leander liked it so much, he bought an Orbi for his home, and it changed your life, didn't it, Leander? Night and day
difference. Oh, absolutely, yeah. Everything's super fast. Yeah, it used to be horrible. You know, we had the one old time capsule. The kids will clog it up with their games and their Netflix and, you know, whatever kids do.
The kids with their Netflix and their games, ruining the web.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you mean.
I can't load up, my wireless radio shows. And, now we've got, the Orbi has a dedicated backhaul. That's the beauty of it. It has its own channel for swapping traffic between the different routers. So it's super, 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 super fast.
And that's something that a lot of the mesh routers out there don't do. They don't have an independent channel to speak to each other. So when the web traffic is being used, the communication between the access points count as your web bandwidth, and so it degrades your speeds, and you don't want that. This is the better technology. This is the technology where the router points have their own dedicated channel, as Lander said, so they can talk to each other on their own channel, and then you get to use the full speed for the channels that you're using with your devices. If you want to change your Wi-Fi world, head on over to netgear.com/Orbi. That's O-R-B-I, netgear.com/Orbi to read more information. And check out the reviews on the web. This is one of the most highly reviewed router systems on the market today. netgear.com/Orbi. Okay, just a quick note from our last show. I want to thank everyone who sent in notes. We talked about, I don't know if it was a controversial topic, but it was a sensitive topic. You know, people were like, why are you guys always so hard on Apple? We talked a little bit about that. And I got a lot of really nice notes from people who said that they didn't think that we were too hard on Apple, and they agreed with a lot of the perspectives that we had. So it was kind of nice just to get some counterpoints. We got some notes saying that we were being too hard on Apple, and then we got some people saying, oh, we think you guys are doing fine. So thank you for the feedback. We appreciate all of it. Honestly, I like hearing from people, period. Even if you want to just roast us, especially if you're going to roast one of the other guys and not me specifically. Those are the ones I really like. But if you roast me, that's fine too. And I just want to read a quick note from one of the listeners. His name's Steven. He said, guys, I've listened to your podcast since episode one, and I've loved listening to every single one of them. And I'm in the Air Force. I'm currently stationed in South Korea, and you guys have helped me get through 3 different duty stations and 1 deployment in Afghanistan. Hmm. That really was, as Nick Cage would say, high praise.
You should start blasting it to the North Koreans, right? Drive them crazy.
Oh, you want to try to get them to start a war, Leander? I mean, Kim Jong-un and Dennis Rodman are over there, and they're just waiting to hit the button on those missiles, Leander. You got to be careful about what you're asking
for.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll de-escalate, you know? Maybe they'll like friendly American and English voices.
It's going to be like in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, where they realize that their music was the unifying force in the entire world. And the future society needed them to pass their history test so that they could create their band, Wild Stallions. You guys know what I'm talking about? Never mind.
Yeah.
Okay, forget it. Somebody out there got that, and they just did a electric guitar on my behalf.
When was the last time you watched that movie? Was it like yesterday?
Too many times. I've definitely watched it in the last 6 months. I have to say, I love messages like this, and messages like this have a special place in my heart because I listen to a lot of podcasts, and you get to a point where with some of these shows where you feel like you're hanging out with your friends, and that's certainly the way I felt when I was listening to my all-time favorite podcast, The Totally Rad Show, which is no longer being made. And, even when you're having bad days, when you're doing things that suck, when you're washing your car or doing your chores, you get to have this audio experience with your friends, and it just makes your day a little bit easier. So I want to thank Steven for sending in this note because it really hit me when I read his note. So, okay, let's enough sappiness. Let's go ahead and move on. Let's talk about what Apple got right in 2017. I got some stuff on my list. Lander's got some stuff on his list. Buster, shit. Why don't you go? Why don't you hit us up first?
Why do I got to go first? I haven't even thought about this.
Okay, Lewis.
What they got? I mean, obviously the iPhone X. It's like they needed a big design change for, I feel like, since the 7, and the 10 was like huge, I feel like. And they've seemed to get the supply issues with it. I think you can buy one like shipping in 3 to 5 days now. So iPhone killing it with that. They did, yeah. So I guess that's my first one.
All right, first one. Check. Lewis, what do you got for us?
Is that what we're doing? We're going to do one each?
Yeah, you can do one or, if you're a Lander, 7 or 8.
I have a list of 18 things to talk about.
I've only got 3 things scribbled
down.
That's
fine. Just rattle them off. What do you got for us?
All right, one, this, I like the way that they're making these chips. You know, they're designing their own chips, and they're super powerful, right? Huh. It's kind of new that they're doing this, but the A11 Bionic, and there's some like a T2 thing in the Mac, you know, that has some kind of security.
The T2
benefits.
Security chip, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's just I mean, you can tell when you buy a new product, you can tell that the performance is awesome. So, you know, that's one of the reasons. The other thing I have written down is HomeKit, the software authentication that they rolled out this year. So,
oh,
that,
man, how did I forget that one? That's a great one.
It's, you know, it kind of blows up HomeKit, right, in a good way. Makes it much easier for hardware manufacturers to be HomeKit compatible. And for those of us who use HomeKit products and like using them and would like to use more, that's going to help.
So let me just elaborate on that really, really quick, because I think that's an important point. So we talked about this in a past show. In order to have your device be HomeKit compatible, you used to have to install a piece of hardware in the device, and now Apple is allowing manufacturers to do that with software instead. So even if you don't have the hardware installed, like your Nest thermostat, they would never do this because Google owns Nest now, but they could effectively turn your Nest into a HomeKit-enabled device just by updating the software, which is really powerful, and hopefully it means there will be a lot more devices out there that become HomeKit compatible.
Exactly.
Lewis, what else you got? There,
okay, last thing, and this is you know, this is nothing new for Apple really, but I think it's especially important this year. I like the tone of Apple's executive team. I like, you know, I don't necessarily agree with everything Apple does, and I think, you know, sometimes they're so milquetoast and so on message, right? They're just like, it's like they've got the talking points, they say them over and over. But, and you know, some people don't like it when company figureheads weigh in on current events, but, you know, typically I kind of don't. But Tim Cook, when he sends out makes a statement about something, I mean, he is just, even if I don't agree with what he says or I'm on the other side of the issue politically, I just – the guy's presidential. I mean it's the tone of his messaging when it comes to domestic affairs, which are on fire in America right now, it is just kind of perfect. And I wish that – I wish there was more of that kind of civility around right now. Hmm. Let's put it that way.
He definitely has civility, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He always seems very thoughtful, all the stuff that he talks about.
He has a great way of saying things that it doesn't put you off, even if you disagree with them, which is it seems like everything's so polarized now. It's like if you look at something, some issue, and you say, well, I don't agree with that, it's like, my God, you're a Nazi! Or, oh my God, you're a communist!
Communist? No one uses that one anymore.
Pinko. I do. Pinko, yeah. We should bring that one back. Anyway, I just really appreciate that. And I wish that there was a little bit more of it floating around. That's
well,
all I got.
It surprised me that you feel that way. You fascist.
Well, you know, what can I
that's
say?
Funny. That's a good point, isn't it? He's only been doing it like for the last year or so. You know, he kept this kind of... He kept out of these issues, didn't he? But he's been weighing in on a lot of things, like DACA, you know, the Dreamers.
Teaming up with Coke to put out well-written. And, you know, it's like, I don't know, man. It's classy, let's put it that way.
Right, definitely. And he's been raising his political profile. And he's been, and you know, like you said, I think he's managed to put his oar in without really stirring up a lot of you know, like unnecessary controversy. Like, he doesn't polarize people as much, does he?
I wonder if he has any political aspirations. Because hearing you guys describe it, it makes me think, I wonder if he's doing this with intention for any other reason than just to express his own opinions, or if he really thinks that, or if he does have any political ambitions. You
I
never
know.
I mean, shoot, I mean, they were saying Kid Rock was going to run for Senate. You never know anymore, right? I mean,
at the same time, like, Tim Cook has so much power as the CEO of Apple. And I think in a lot of ways from his interviews, I feel like he feel some type of sense of obligation that right. as this figurehead to make some changes for good, or what he sees to be changes for good.
So maybe he's just doing it for altruistic reasons.
Well, he's got a bully pulpit, right?
So.
That was the impression I got.
I think he's a great CEO. I mean, I like him as a CEO better than Jobs, just because he's more selfless than Jobs was, I think.
We could do a whole show on that comparison. Wow.
I'm just as far as like he's somebody that you're like, oh, like that's a guy that I don't know, is trying to do good in the world. Whereas Steve Jobs was trying to do other things.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I'm having a hard time not interrupting. Yeah, okay. Yeah, one guy's trying to do good. One guy's trying to make good products. You know, it's like just very different motivations.
Totally.
Okay, Lander, do you want to go next? Actually, let me go next because you have the mega list, right?
So let me clear the stage.
Let me just do mine because I've only got a couple, and then you can do your 15-minute monologue. So 2017, I think that Apple, they really dedicated themselves to making computers great again. And I like that they're taking risks again this year because it's kind of been ho-hum for a while. And they did that big, well, they did that event with those people from the press and admitted basically, we need to do better. We need to make the MacBook or the Mac Pro again. And laid out a plan on how they were going to do that, and they seem to be executing on that plan. And so I'm excited to see where they're going to go in 2018, because I think that finally the Mac is going to get the attention we've all been hoping it would get, and so I'm excited about that. They seem like they get it. The other thing is they've been bold. I mean, you got the AirPods this year, which are some of the best products Apple's ever made. You got the updated iMac, the updated MacBook Pro with the Touch Bar, and then you have the iPhone 10, and they've all been updated in, for Apple, bold ways. Apple's not Samsung. They're usually much more conservative in the types of refinements they make. And you really saw them make some big steps this year and take some risks and create products that they weren't, that were different than products they released in the past. And I would say that they couldn't be completely confident people were going to love, and yet they just went out there and they did it. And so I would like to see Apple do more of that in 2018 as well, because I think they're headed down the right path. I don't think they completely found their path yet, but I think that they're like that person wandering through the design lab with a blindfold on. They're looking for the coffee and they're on their way there. And I like seeing that they're searching for those paths anyway. Okay, Leander, go for it.
Okay, well, I've got a list of 8 things.
And nothing for the 2018 list, right? Because they've already nailed it. They've already done everything perfectly.
They've done everything, yeah. And yeah. Funny enough, I had down here Tim Cook, more poised, political, assured.
Yeah. Okay.
And I also had iPhone X, so, you know, I hit Buster's one too.
All right.
You know, the other ones, I think, you know, even though people have been complaining about the software, you know, like putting out all these updates and fixing all these glitches and all these different, you know, they've had a few problems. The root access was a pretty big,
that was a
embarrassing
big one.
Yeah, but yeah. More embarrassing, I think, you know, than a real, because you have, you know, I don't know how exploitable it was, mm-hmm. unless you were kind of in the room with a machine. But yeah, embarrassing nonetheless. But you know, I think they've been nailing it on the software. You know, like iOS 11 is really great. Is, you know, especially on the iPad, it really makes a big difference on how you use that device. And it's like, you know, finally it's splitting iOS into, you know, two different systems, you know, one for the phone, one for the iPad. I think watchOS is really great as well. It's a lot better than it used to be.
Wow, you've come a long way on watchOS.
Yeah. It's still not perfect, and it's still, you know, some of it is still a little bit befuddling the way it's done. They still have that horrible home screen, but, you know, finally they're getting away from that. But in a lot of ways, you know, it does work really well. If you don't dive into it too much, you know, like if you're sort of passive about the watch, I think it's almost perfect. You know, that if you just use it to get notifications, mm-hmm. if you know, just looking at it, when you actually sort of dig into it and start tapping around and trying to do things on it, that's when it starts to fail, I think, and it's a little too fiddly. But
that's funny.
If you set it up, you know, if you've already set it up and you have certain things, and if things are happening on it, you know, stuff you set up using your phone or with the apps on it, you know, using it passively, I think it works really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
High Sierra is really good. I think the new App Store is really good. I really like the new App Store.
The new App Store in...
iOS
or Mac OS?
The iOS App Store.
Oh, okay, got it.
The Mac OS App Store? What?
You're like, oh, wait, that's still there? Yeah, I didn't even realize that was still something
I think
existed.
I downloaded something up there the other day. I just use it for software updates, basically. But
me too.
Yeah, the new App Store is pretty good. AR Kit, you know, as I think has been a huge smashing success.
You think so? Really?
Well, so far, I think, the AR stuff is pretty amazing. I don't think we're going to see the potential for AR. Like, you know, I think next year it's going to start to bloom.
I guess I was expecting AR Kit to be more of an immediate presence. I thought as soon as it launched, we're going to start seeing it everywhere. And you might be right. It might take some while for...
I don't think people have figured out what to do with it yet. Yeah, you know, I don't think that's right. There's a lot of sort of toy applications. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, next year, it might even take a bit longer. You know, it's going to take a little while for someone to come up with like a killer idea. And then I think it's going to be like, oh, man, you know, and then it's going to open up the eyes, everyone's eyes. And you know, suddenly it'll really take off in a big way. But, you know, the foundations are there. You know, it works really, really well. You can stick digital objects in the scene and they look, you know, but that, you know, real-ish.
Right, yeah.
Okay. But, and then, you know, I think architecture this year, they've done some amazing, you know, obviously there's a spaceship campus.
Oh, man, that's a great one.
But look at some of the stores. You know, that one in Dubai with the funky windows?
Mm-hmm.
The Chicago store on the waterfront there is just mind-boggling. I was looking at some pictures of the Singapore store, the Orchard Road, you know, that looks really beautiful. And in fact, a lot of the elements, you know, that they use in the spaceship campus, like the handrails for integrating the concrete for going up and down stairs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, they've been using all of these same elements in some of the stores as well. Johnny Ive, you know, been taking his... figuring stuff out in the stores and then taking
out
the spaceship.
That's
campus,
a great one, like. Lander. That's a really good pick. That you're right. That might be my favorite one of 2017. Is, and I think it so perfectly encapsulates Apple and their philosophy and the way they do things. Is even their stores are beautiful creations, and they put so much attention to design and detail and care into those. And they could just be a Nordstrom's or a Macy's, you know, where you go right in, you pick up your computer and you leave. And yet they don't do that. Every one of their stores is a set piece. And
yeah,
in like 1,000 years, when all of society has imploded and it's all tribal and everyone's like roaming the lands and hunting animals again, like the tribal leaders are going to be the guys who live in those Apple stores, right? Like that's going to be like their palace.
Yeah.
And there, it's almost like the pyramids in that way is in 1,000 years when we're all gone, people are going to look at those and be like, what was here? What is this where they housed their gods? You know, it's like, no,
right.
These are where the MacBooks were sold.
Yeah, I think it's be what's this giant pile of broken glass?
Actually, yeah, that would be it. It would just be the frame, right? The metal frame. Sorry, I didn't mean to jump in there, Leander. What else you got?
You know, renewable energy. Their push towards renewable energy is pretty amazing. The first time this year, one of their suppliers went 100% renewable. That's a big milestone, I think, and very significant. It was a Japanese company, and it wasn't really. You know, I wrote down the name. Did I write them? Iberdon. I don't know what they do. You know, it wasn't really clear. They make connections or something like that that go inside. They're not a big supplier. It's not like Foxconn.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Apple's is 100% renewable in the States, in its operations, and in, I think, 23 countries or something like that. So Apple itself, you know, has been 100% running on 100% renewable energy.
It's incredible.
Pretty successfully. But, you know, they're just running, you know, offices and stores. They're not doing any really sort of, you know, aluminium smelting or anything like that. You know, nothing that takes a ton of energy.
Well, they might be in the design lab.
Yeah, but, you know, it's not. The spaceship campus, you know, with all its solar panels is 100% renewable. But, you know, I haven't seen a breakdown, but, I'm pretty sure that 90% of Apple's, you know, energy usage comes in the supply chain.
Oh, when they're actually manufacturing stuff.
Yeah, the actual manufacturing. And you know, because it's done by partners and contractors, you know, it allows Apple to sort of say, okay, well, this is, you know, the supply chain. It's not us.
Right,
but,
right.
I think it's significant that one of the suppliers is now going 100% renewable. And, you know, it's something that's we're going to see more and more. And I think really encouraging, really cool.
Okay, is that all your 2017 stuff?
You know, timely product updates. You know, like there's a lot of complaints that Apple hasn't been updating its products in a timely manner. You know, like where's the new iMac?
Yes.
Where's the new MacBook? Where's the new iPad? This last year, they updated all the major product lines. In fact, it was crazy. It was kind of overwhelming, wasn't it? New watches, new iPads, new iPad Pros, you know?
The iPad.
Everything was updated. Everything was, you know, they seem to have kind of nailed that, you know, the incremental stuff again. They're back on their old game.
Well, it's hard to say with one data point. It's like they waited a really long time to update their stuff, and then they updated everything this year. I want to see if they continue in that tradition now and are committed to doing that every year and not just waiting another 3 years to update stuff again, which very well could happen. And that's what I'm worried they're going to do.
They won't say anything for 3 years forward, and suddenly they'll get updated in 2022.
Exactly. Okay, so 2018, things that they could be doing better. I've only got a couple, so let me just roll mine off real fast. I want to see them make the MacBook Pro again. It's got the professional price tag. It's got the professional screen. And it has a lot of wonderful components built in that I love. But CPU specifically, the GPU specifically, they need to really beef it up, man. They need to put some serious hardware in these machines and make them faster than they have been making them. Because when a 2017 MacBook Pro is only like 10 or 15% faster than my 2013, you got a problem. And you can't call this machine a pro when it is not made with the same... It's not made with high-level components that match the high price tag, because the MacBook Pro, I think, is more expensive than ever. They just keep raising the price on it. And so I'd like to see them beef that up. I'd also like to see them make the MacBook practical again. Give us the practical ports. Give us the USB-A. Give us the SD card slots. You know, Phil Schiller said they're not professional ports, and then he went ahead and put them on the iMac Pro. It's like, WTF, Phil. Which one is it? Make up your mind, because I think that pros need practicality, not dongles, not bags full of dongles. They want the ports that they're going to use day in and day out on their machine. They won't have to carry around a bunch of extra crap. And they've updated the iMac, and they have committed to updating the Mac Pro and making it professional again. I'd like to see them make the same commitment to the MacBook Pro. Okay, the other thing is I'd like to see Apple become the YouTube of podcasts. They haven't been giving podcasts enough attention. And I know I'm biased, but podcasting is a really cool medium. I listen to a lot of podcasts. And the podcasting app just isn't very intelligent. It allows you to listen to podcasts, and that's about it. Look at YouTube. When you go to YouTube, YouTube uses algorithms. It figures out the kind of content that you like, and then it presents you with content that you may never have heard of. And I've found countless content on YouTube through that smart intelligence. Well, that's what Apple needs to do. The podcast discovery system is like, it's like a digital newspaper. It's out of the 1980s. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. How hard is it to find good podcasts these days? It's impossible, because Apple doesn't do any kind of AI to surface content for anybody and show you stuff that you might like based upon the stuff that you're already using. And there's no reason why they shouldn't be doing that. Apple owns the podcast market. They're the ones everyone goes to listen to podcasts. And so they have a responsibility to really take it seriously, and they haven't been. It's been like the Mac Mini to them. It's just there. If you want one, great. Get the hell out. You know, it's like, here's your Mac Mini. Okay, now get out of here. Don't talk to me. I want to see them do better and make podcasts more discoverable, more accessible for everybody. Okay, who's next? Lewis, why don't you go first?
Well, I mean, next. We talked about it. We talked about it a little bit already. The bugs, you know. I mean, I think they do need to step that up just a little bit more quality assurance before they ship stuff. You know, I'm certainly not the first person to bring that up, even in this podcast, right? But you know, they have a lot of money, they have a lot of resources. They should probably test this stuff a little bit more.
You should probably test it before you release it. Just a suggestion. I'm not a software engineer. Just my opinion.
I mean, you know, some of that stuff is truly embarrassing. And, you know, it's a big black eye. Killian wrote a long post talking about how, you know, this is, you know, they don't want to be, you don't want Apple to become, you know, Samsung, you know, oh, the phone is on fire, right? you know, but it just seems like every other week there was another giant, you know, giant, like, not good bug. And some of this stuff, like, I mean, some of it is really kind of dangerous, and some of it's just like, oh my God, are you serious? I can't type an I, or I can't type
that
it.
Was a weird one.
I mean, come on. That now, it's just, yeah. It's silly.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
It recurred?
Well, I thought they fixed it.
Well, you have to update.
Oh, that's wrong.
I did update, and I've still got it, in fact, unless I'm doing something wrong.
Really?
Yeah. I was trying to send some puking emojis to my daughter, and it came up with, like, question marks and weird glitches. But I'm running 11.2, so I don't know what the hell's going on.
Bugs. Noted. Yeah. Lewis, anything else?
One more. Okay. You know, don't promise something and not deliver it.
Oh, yeah.
Smoked
him. HomePod. Where are you? I mean, this thing's already late, right? AirPods, I mean, everybody and their brother too. Now has a Amazon Echo.
And, not me. I'm saving myself for HomePod.
Well,
actually, yeah. I do have an Echo. What am I saying? I have two. But I'm gonna just as soon as HomePod comes out, I'm not even gonna try and sell it. I'm just gonna throw it in the garbage can and never think about it again.
Yeah, I mean, I want to see it. I just, the price point's pretty high. I can't wait to see what it sounds like. And but I'm gonna have to wait, aren't I? You know, what is it? 6 months ago, they say, "Hey, this thing's coming out. This year. Here's the price tag. Here's not very much information about it, but why even say that if you're not going to do it? I mean, I haven't heard anything about why they weren't able to ship it. But to me, it just seems crazy. Yeah. Okay. Well. Yeah. I mean, I've heard that too, but my point is just...
Well, they didn't used to do this, did they? They didn't used to talk about stuff. It
no.
was like...
No, they used to be good at that.
Yeah.
AirPods was the same way, though, too.
Yeah. Right, right. And, it's just kind of weird, right? I mean, I was starting to wonder if iMac Pro was going to make it before the end of the year, and it just barely did.
Maybe that's why Richard
right?
Howes got canned.
Yeah, I was just going to say, maybe that's why they're gone.
Because he said, let's announce it now. We'll have it out for Christmas. You know, we don't want to get everyone to buy, Echoes and Echo Amazon Alexa stuff. And Google Home, uh-huh. And then they didn't mm-hmm. deliver. Now, okay, it's see you later.
But so anyway, that's it's kind of a minor thing in a way. But at the same time, just keep it under wraps or something. Don't give us a date. I don't know.
Don't tease me, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
I hear that.
It's going to be a HomePod free Christmas. That's all I can say.
That's funny. Okay, Buster, what do you got?
Well, it'd be cool if they updated the Mac Mini someday, like. That would be a cool one. Like, you're complaining about the iMac Pro or the MacBook Pro, but like, I've been waiting for like a new iMac Mini for like 4 years now.
Oh, you're the guy waiting for it?
Yeah, the one. But I mean, it's like the most accessible Mac on the market, so I don't get why Apple doesn't push it more frequently as like, a great Mac.
Because they sell about three every quarter when they sell 3 million iPhones a day.
Yeah, I know.
And yet they keep it around. And Tim Cook said in an interview in the last month that they were going to continue updating the iMac Mini and that people shouldn't get discouraged.
Yeah.
So, they're working on something, but it is a good point. I mean, why just let it sit there and languish and not do anything about it?
It's
if you're
going to
sell it, update it. If not, get rid of it.
Yeah. So that, and then also original TV content. Definitely sucked balls in 2017. Planet of the Apps.
How dare you talk about
Carpool
my favorite
Karaoke.
Show that
way. Yeah, they were pretty terrible. So I'm interested to see where Apple goes with that in 2018.
Should,
seems how they already
you
want
to see them continue doing it, or do you think they should just get out of it?
I get like why they want to do it. I personally think they should get out of it because there's so many.
It seems like
I
a weird feel like sideline.
Everyone's trying to get streaming now, though. Even Disney is announcing plans. Didn't they just buy 20th Century Fox? I mean, they're going full on pedal to the metal with streaming content. I think Bob Iger was saying that's his vision for Disney is to move into that whole digital streaming realm and to become the
Netflix,
next Netflix. Yeah, well, everyone's trying to get
Netflix
a piece of that pie.
They just picked up, 18 Golden Globe nominations or something like that, more than HBO. Yeah. And HBO used to be the number one.
Wow.
They got some good shows, too,
But there's so much good TV. I mean, do you really want it from Apple? And
That's what I question. And I get, make TV shows and then, people have to watch them through Apple devices and services and, it'll help grow those in some way. But also, I just feel like, like you're saying, there's so much good TV already. I don't need more great TV, and I don't need it from Apple, of all places. Mm-hmm.
It does feel like they're kind of leaving their core competency too, right?
Yeah.
Apple has always been a hardware company, and the services were always meant to complement the hardware that you purchased. That's why they created those services is to sell the hardware. But now with the TV stuff, that's completely disconnected from hardware, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. But yet Apple seems still committed to only including their services with their hardware. So it's a strange dichotomy because they don't want to sell their products or their services without hardware, but some of their services would do better if they weren't sold as hardware. Example, Apple TV. If they would just let Apple TV, the spirit of Apple TV, live on in televisions without having to buy their hardware, it would probably do much better. But I guess how would Apple make money on that you know. And the same with the TV stuff. I mean, it's going to have to, if they want it to really succeed, it's going to have to live beyond the Apple ecosystem of hardware, right? It's going to have to be available on anywhere people watch TV if they really want that content to become successful. They can't just show it on Apple TV.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree with that. I mean, I've thought this ever since I've heard about it, you know. And what have they had so far? A couple of crappy shows and a bunch of, they've bought a bunch of music documentaries. I mean,
yeah.
Yay.
I do love music documentaries, though, I have to admit.
Really? I'm still waiting for the accordion documentary.
The hotness of polka. All right, Lander, take us home.
Well, I don't have a great list. If I don't have any...
Can't think of anything.
I've got nothing on it. There's nothing they can do better. You just need them to keep doing more.
You know, like my favorite, one of my favorite gadgets is the Amazon Echo, and I wish, you know, like Lewis said, you know, the HomePod would have been awesome, but I'd love to see the HomePod really become like a really good OS for the home, and really take over, you know, HomeKit, and really become, you know, like have the speaker become, you know, the HomePod become the natural hub for HomeKit integration. And I'm just sort of skeptical. We haven't, obviously, you know, it's conjecture that it's going to suck, but I already know it's going to suck. And
I think we all innately know it's just going to suck. The speaker, I think, is going to be great, but the smart features.
They might do, you know, like if the microphone array is really good and really good at like picking up sound, then, you know, there's a chance that it would work. I think, you know, I wonder whether that's half the issue with Siri not understanding what you're saying. It's just that, you know, it has difficulty hearing you, and maybe if they have a better microphone array, that would, like, you know, go some of the way towards solving that. But yeah, you know, like HomeKit, home integration, the home OS, you know, having a home OS based on Siri, using Siri as your home OS. I'd love to see them nail that. That's what I'd like to see them do in 2018.
How did I know your 2018 list was going to be short?
I don't know.
And you just came up with those on the fly, didn't
I just,
you?
Yep, totally.
You didn't even have a list of things they could do better. Because you're like, well, there's just nothing to write down. There's just nothing that they could do. Alrighty, well, I think we should go ahead and wrap it up there. Remember to come back next week. We're going to be doing our favorite television of 2017. And I'm sure Leander and Buster are going to have massive lists for those. Because they're always watching TV programs I've never heard of. Oh yeah, don't forget to check out the Netgear Orbi if you want to eliminate the Wi-Fi dead spots in your house. If you want to drastically increase the speed of your Wi-Fi network, I think you're really going to like it. Check it out, netgear.com/Orbi. That's netgear.com/ORBI. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. If you want to come say hi, or you want to talk about any of the stories that we mentioned in today's show, you can always come say what's up on Twitter. I'm at AirFunBusters, BST3R. Leander is L. Caney. Lewis is at Lewis Wallace. This has been the Cultcast, the best, most prolific, most amazing 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys and girls next time. I got to give that some more oomph. Next time.
Next time.
What was that? Did I take it? I think I swung it too far to the other side. That was too aggressive, wasn't it?
Sound like a Dracula or something.
Really? Was that Dracula? Well, how would you say it? What's the difference between smoking it and eating it? Like, as far as what you feel, what are the main differences?
It's more, you're more profoundly stoned.
Really?
Yeah. And, like, you know, someone tried to say something to me and I just couldn't get any words out. My speech facilities had completely seized up. Yeah. And I sort of nodded and smiled, and then about 30 minutes later, a minute later, you know, then I was like, then I suddenly I realized what I should have said to the guy.
You had a great comeback.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Like, that's exactly what it was.
And then
like.
You blurted it out loud. You realized you were just sitting there by yourself.
And I said, hey, God, you know. And
excuse me, sir. No, you stop.
It's not always
it.
Like that, actually. You know, another time, on another occasion, I had a really long conversation with these two women on a park bench. So long to the point where they got up and left, and I was like,
reported you to the authorities.
Yeah, and I was like, hey, come back. it wasn't that bad. I think it was fun. You can't really tell. You know, it was almost like an out of body experience. Like I was almost like sitting over my shoulder and looking at myself from on high while I was talking. But I was laughing and I was telling some jokes, and it seemed to go pretty well.
And then 30 minutes later, they were tweeting about it with the hashtag #MeToo.
I was dressed in lycra, yeah. So could have been.